Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
The thing you mentioned earlier were books, Maggie, and right? Like, do you include books in your playroom?
I do not.
Why?
The waiting room. Why don't I? I find that when there are books and when there's reading, it often takes you out of the relationship. So that they're no longer, like, we're no longer engaging together, but like they're engaging with the book. And so it's hard to reflect that, like, you're really focused on what you're reading. You're really, you know, so it's like, it's, and I don't know, I just find it takes us out of the relationship, I guess. What about you?
Yeah, I sparingly use books, and I'll share an instance when I did use a book, but for me it's more about, there's two factors why I don't include a lot of books. It's a lot about performative, right? So they feel pressure that they have to be able to read and read accurately and like get through a book. Like there is, based on kids being in school, you know, and like how we're teaching and like encouraging, that it's harder to stay in a true child-centered kind of lens if books are added to the playroom. The other part for me is I have included them when requested by a child. So I was sharing a story with Maggie about how I had a kiddo that I worked with who was on the spectrum and kept hearing, you know, like a term being referenced to them at school. And so they were really confused. Like they didn't know what this term meant, but they knew it had like big implications for them. So the term was autism or Asperger's, right? And they kept just saying like, do you know what this is? Like people keep saying that that is me, but I don't know what that is. So how do I know if it's me or not, right? And they kept just kind of repeating and felt a lot of confusion. I did a lot of reflecting, like you're really worried, you don't know what that means. Right. And they were saying, like, my parents won't tell me, and like, my teachers don't describe it to me, or, you know, the people that I go to just say that I have it. What does it mean? I don't understand what it means. Mm-hmm. And the kid turned to me and said, do you know what it means? Do you know what that is? And I was like, you're really trying to find answers. You really want to know. I know. Do you know what it is? Because I know if you know, you'll tell me. And so of course I know what it means. Right. And so I said, I do know what that means. And they were so relieved because no one would tell them up until this point.
Yeah.
And said, oh, can you tell me what it means? I said, I would be happy to. Is it okay if I brought some material for us to go over so that, right. So then you would have resources to be able to know what this means, and then you could share that with other people. So I did introduce something into the playroom with the intent that this could help the child.
Did you talk with the parents about that?
I had talked with the parents about it before, and I encouraged them, and they were open to it. So it was never,
they weren't hiding.
Others, you know, like, and this is a real sticking point for me personally as a therapist and as a human. I work a lot with many adoptive kids, and there's a few families that don't want to tell their kids that they're adopted. And I am a firm believer that I think kids should know that they're adopted, right? Which is, and that's a conversation I have with parents over kids in the playroom. Like I ask that in my intake, you know, like, does your child know their adoption story? Like all of that stuff as part of the intake process. And my message, and we're really getting off track here, is really about, you know, like at some point your child is going to find out that they're adopted.
Right.
Right. That's not something you can keep hidden forever. Maybe it's, you know, in an unfortunate situation where they, have some medical thing and they're needing blood transfusion, then you aren't even, neither you or your partner are the same blood type. Like, that's not going to make sense to them at some point, right? And then you have held this narrative for a long time, and to your child, it could feel like you're lying to them, right? And like, let's think about that navigation, right? I'm not suggesting that's what you should do, right? I think it's easier the earlier we tell kids, it becomes part of their narrative. Da, da, da. Anywho, but coming, so in those instances, but I also have a philosophy that I won't lie to kids, and I tell parents that because I've worked in the medical world too, and parents have said, I don't want my child to know their medical diagnoses. And I was like, if your child flat out asks me, it's really important that they have trust, and I'm not going to lie to them. So I need you to know that. And we have long conversations about that beforehand. But for this kiddo, the parents and I have had conversations before about, it's not that they wanted their kid not to know, they just didn't know how to explain it. I had offered some references, some resources for them to look at it. I think they just felt really lost. So I did let them know that the child had asked after and that we were going to go over it the next week, which they were thrilled. They were like, great, someone else is going to do it. This is great. Because we don't know how, I offered for them to be in on the appointment if they wanted to do it together with us. The kid did not want their parents in there. They wanted it to just be me and them. And the parents honored that. We did invite the parents in the end, and the child told the parents what their what being on the spectrum meant and what this diagnosis was. But I did bring a book in related to that because they had asked. So to me, the child took the lead of really requesting. I just asked to be able to bring resources in to help describe it to them.
How did you find the book?
I love children's books in my office here. I mean, I have a giant bookshelf of children's books that I use in trainings and in my teaching and in other places. So it's not uncommon for me to have random resources that I can pull from. But also, I really like childrenshealth.org. I think they have great resources online. They're free. It's from Nemours Children's Hospital. They're the ones who upkeep it. It's done by physicians. There's a whole consulting team to make sure the information is well developed. And it's also broken down into for children, for teens, for parents, and for professionals. So you can find the same resources written differently for each one of those age groups so that you have more knowledge. So I started there, and they had a checklist about common characteristics for children on the spectrum, right? And we there was I had a little book about a boy, and this client was male, and identified as male. And so I thought it would be a good like connection that they here's another male child who has autism, right? And so we kind of read through the book because it describes what autism is. He was so cute. He's like, I do that. Oh, I do that. Oh, and I do that, right? And so I presented it as, there are common characteristics that help describe that people use names for to help describe what kids do so that they can get the support they need. That's typically how I describe it. And they were like, oh, so because I do all those things, that's why people say that I have this or they use this title. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, like this was so simple for me to understand, right? And he asked to borrow the book. The family brought the book home. I also know that sometimes I won't get it back when I do that. This family did bring it back, but I also know that sometimes I'm going to lose things that way. But I was willing. This family really seemed to need it. He shared it with his teachers. He shared it with some of his friends. He shared it with his siblings, right? But it just built common language. And he didn't feel like there was something wrong with him, which ultimately is the important part, right? Because I didn't want to present it as these are problems. These are just ways that people deal with the world. So he was really cute. And then the checklist, I had the checklist. He's like, oh, I'm going to check all the things that I do. And I was like, okay. And so he went through and he checked like 80% of them. He's like, see, look, all these things describe me. And I was like, they do. It was just really sweet. So in those ways, I think books can be helpful, but it's not something I have regularly in my playroom. I do in my waiting room, right? As parents or kids, because I think it's a great relational activity about reading together. It can be a nurturing time. It can be competence if kids need competence in the waiting room as they read things. I have a lot of picture books. I have a lot of resources for parents reading resources for parents in my waiting room too. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm not as good as at looking at children's books. So I call Christy. Like, what do I do?
Like my first career used a lot of those resources, right? As a child life specialist, I used a lot of those resources to help kids understand what was happening to them. So I think my comfort level and like wanting good resources that can help explain things to kids is important to me.
Yeah.
But I just have those references and I get frustrated when I don't have something and I'm on like a long journey because there's a lot of terrible kids books out there too. So don't just trust someone else's recommendations. Make sure you read it, look at it. You know, you have to, for me, if using a book, right? Like if I recommend it to a parent, it means because I really think that this is a helpful book, not just because someone else recommended. I do a deep dive into them to make sure I'm giving good content.
Yeah.
Other books like for kids who've had like a history of sexual abuse or molestation, I don't choose to read those in the playroom. I send them home for families to read about good boundaries. So I don't always use books in the playroom. Sometimes I'm just recommending them to parents about how can they set better boundaries holistically for this child, right? And here are some resources that can help you do that. So I don't always use, that's probably my, I go to that more than pulling books into the playroom. To pull a book, the child has to really ask. They have to take the lead on that. And then with adolescents and adults, if I'm going to be honest, I don't recommend a lot of books because I think sometimes, and this is just my own bias, it really depends on the client. Does this client overthink everything? By giving them a book, are they going to the other parts of themselves, like needing to feel and like actually have some discomfort about something? Or does logic just help them, you know, not address things that need to be addressed? So I don't always recommend books for clients like that. And so I do have some adults and adolescents that tend to go towards like, I need to logically think about this and, you know, put this in a box when the real problem is I'm not looking outside of this logic box. I'm negating my feelings and other stuff. In that case, I don't recommend books.
Yeah.
And so again, therapeutic intention is really important here.
I think like that's kind of the two things that I hear is that we have to be like really intentional as to what we're doing and why, and then we have to be prepared for what this could look like and how we might respond or engage in those moments, right? Because if we're having games, how are like we need to be aware of ourselves and how that might come out. And then if you're bringing books, like how this could be perceived and how the relationship is, so that you can ensure that it's not like a negative experience, right? Like you knew that client and you knew that if you were to just be like, well, that's something you can find out, that that would feel really dismissive and hurtful.
Already done that to him, right? Like he wasn't getting the answers that they needed in the moment. They were needing someone to walk them through this and have a better understanding and sit with them in as they navigate it, what that meant. And so, like, there was a lot of reflections. There were a lot of our foundational skills that was used even when sharing this information, right? Like, ooh, you're really thinking about that. You're excited. You do those same things, right? Like, there was a lot of that in reading. So I wasn't just stuck in reading the book. I was really like navigating the combination of including this information that this kid requested from me into our play time because he was really struggling to figure out what this meant for him, right? And in that, I was also navigating the what this meant for him and how he was personalizing this or you know, like how that was making sense to him. So I was really trying to navigate both components.
Because you would have been there too if he was like, oh, this doesn't feel right to you. Like, this
There
feels
were, he's
uncomfortable.
like, I don't do things like that. I was like, oh, so that one doesn't match for you. He's like, yeah, I don't do that. And I was like, that just doesn't feel right to you. That's not something that, you know, like you recognize in yourself. He's like, no. Okay. He's like, I'm just going to black that out. So he took a big black marker and like sharpied it out. I was like, because that doesn't fit for you. He's like, it doesn't. Right. But then as things fit, that worked for him.
Takes a lot of thought, a lot of
And sometimes I'd like to say I'm like that thoughtful all the time, but sometimes you're navigating as you go through, right? We make mistakes. Like, I can't say I've never brought a book in and then been like, why did I do this? Why is this on the shelf? Like, what was I thinking? I've done that too, right? To learn and grow and like figure out what, matches best theoretically. I've also been persuaded by other people to do things that I know don't fit with my theoretical orientation and have to like backtrack and apologize and repair with my client because I changed the rules of our session because someone else asked me to do this. The child didn't ask me, someone else asked me to do that. And so, because this is their space, I have to be really thoughtful of that as well.
Well, thank you, Christy. I think this was really helpful. I hope.
Yeah. But no, it's something I get questioned a lot on, and I think I know I've shared this with Maggie. I don't know if I've shared with this with our listeners, but I love setting up playrooms. Like, I don't know, I have this, I just love the puzzle of like how do things fit? How does this flow? All that stuff. And so sometimes I go into playrooms and I'm, like just looking at flow and other stuff. But I like my heart drops a little bit when I see a lot of board games or a lot of books in a child-centered playroom because I'm like, that really doesn't match theoretically. And also, like, sometimes they're on the bottom shelf, that sees kids 2 to 13. And I'm thinking, why do you have that easily accessible to a 2-year-old? There's so many tiny parts. That's so dangerous. And all you're doing is setting limits because the 2-year-old wants to pull that stuff out because no one ever lets them play with it. Right. And then I'm just thinking, like, why is that it? Yeah, that could be a whole nother.
Well, and I think like that's something too that I hope our listeners, like, as we kind of grow and expand, and as interest arises, it's like maybe if you have questions about your playroom or want consultations about your playroom, that that's something that I'm not going to say I'm very good at, but I think Christy's really, really good at. And
To do, and I would be happy to. I told Maggie I want to design like a whole service about just setting up playrooms, like helping you get your materials and where to put them and how does it flow in your space, because we can't just put like a one-stop model out there because spaces look all different and they're not all going to feel the same, and like the region of the country you live in and what are like responsive toys and who do you service and what do you expose, like all that stuff I think is really important, what your beliefs are, how those play out in your space.
well, I think that also can be one of the things that's frustrating, like to bring us back to like our like kind of first discussion about like ourselves and stuff, is that like play therapy and child-centered, it's very hard to give a straight answer, yes or no, because there's so many things we're really trying to encapsulate and understand the holistic aspects of it. And so it is there, it's we tell our students all the time, embrace the ambiguity. And usually, like, they're like, I did. And I'm, or then, like, by the end, and I'm like, where's the ambiguity? They're like, you didn't tell me I needed to do this. I'm like, well, okay. And then it's like, you're disrespectful. I'm like,
Heard that say embrace ambiguity.
yes. And so I think that's part of it, is that it's nuanced. And what I hope that we don't get from this is like us saying, this is what you have to do, because that doesn't feel authentic.
Not accurate, right? Like there's no, this is the only way to do something. But yeah, if you are seeking consultation, let me know. I'm happy to. I've helped several of our graduates, as well as, just people I know who are moving to new spaces or feel like their space is no longer flowing. I literally like totally get excited about looking at play space. Something wrong with me, but that's okay.
No, so you can email Christy at playtherapyspace.com or info at playtherapyspace.com if you have questions, concerns. And check out our website, because we do talk about like some of our books that we believe to be really instrumental, that you can like just like click on them and go straight to Amazon. So.
Also, if you have topics that you want us to cover, don't hesitate to send them to info at playtherapyspace.com. Maggie and I can talk about anything. So, have at it.
And if we can't, we'll bring someone on who we think can. So yeah. And if there's anybody that you really are like, I want to hear da 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 da, let us know and we'll do our best. We have a pretty vast network.
And we're not afraid to ask.
No, that is definitely true. I
Yeah.
cold call people all the time. Like, I'm
I
really
get afraid
nervous.
to ask anyone. The turtle in me is more like, do I know them? What will they say to me?
Yeah, that's what I do. And then I, as soon as I like get them on the phone and I'm asking them questions, I'm like, I realize how vulnerable I'm being right now. I'm literally telling someone that I don't know the answer, but
Because we shouldn't know all the answers. But yeah, tap into us. We look forward to seeing you at our next podcast. And again, let us know how we can support you.
thanks, Christy.
Bye, Maggie.
Bye.